On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Gary Wilson to uncover midterm rentals.
Hey, Mavericks. This is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover midterm rentals. What are they and how do they work and how can you benefit from them? Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Subscribe to the show, never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description in this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person with multiple decades of experience, hundreds and hundreds of units under his belt at this point. Prior to his career in real estate, he was a government contractor. It all changed when he was 35 years old. He recalled an experience when he bought his first property at the age of 23, what his mentor at that time said, which you're going to listen to on today's episode. I would describe today's Maverick, someone who's absolutely passionate about helping other people, educating them, and helping them hit their next level. Today's Maverick, I've got Gary Wilson here with me. Say, Gary, for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
I appreciate the question, and it's good to be here, Neil. I appreciate the opportunity. So again, my name is Gary Wilson, and I currently own and run what we believe is the largest production team of investor agencies, real estate agents, that we train how to invest and how to work with investors, because I'm an investor. We're all investors on the team. We're in 38 states and growing rapidly, and from what I'm being told, there's no other team, but an official production team that covers that much territory. So it's kind of neat getting that kind of feedback from the industry. But the way it started was, just give you the real quick background so it'll make more sense. I was always interested in real estate. When I was a kid, I was literally drawing house plans when I was 8 years old, floor plans. My grandfather taught me how. He taught architecture at university. My mother gave me the T-square and the drawing board and all the everything. And I'm literally drawing floor plans at 8 years old. And so fast forward, I thought, I'm going to be in real estate. I'm going to be an architect. And that didn't work out so well because I applied to Virginia Tech and they invited me in for interview and said, we're not going to accept you in school architecture. You should have applied to general studies. Why didn't you do that? And I said, well, I don't know. Where I went to college, Neil, I mean, it was farm country. I mean, maybe 10% of the kids went to college. So our high school counselor was probably completely in the dark. So in any case, fast forward, I get to Old Dominion University, the school by the sea. And my first year college roommate happens to be a guy named Socrates. We're still good friends today. His dad was a Greek immigrant and was a big investor in Richmond, Virginia. And we graduated. Sock's dad helped us buy our first house. He never gave us a dime. He didn't give us the fish. He taught us how to fish. So it was a 4-bedroom, 2-bedroom rancher, just 5 minutes from the ocean. And we bought it by assuming the owner's first mortgage, refinancing his second, and then we gave him a third note for the remaining equity. So we literally had 3 notes on this property. We rented out the other 2 bedrooms to 2 other guys whose rents pretty much paid all, but $50 out of pocket for Sock and I. each. So we're like living a life, man, living at the beach. We got our own house. We're 23 years old. Yeah. And we're going to just live the life. And in any case, 2 years later, I get married. We moved to Pittsburgh and was idle for 10 years doing the corporate thing and raising a family. And at 35 years old, I remember something Sock's dad told us at the closing table, pounding his chest, saying, if you boys do what I tell you to do, you won't have to work for anybody else when you're 35 years old. Of course, we didn't do that. We bought boats and cars and all kinds of stuff and just goofed off. And at 35 years old, I'm thinking, I really wish I'd have paid attention to him. So I started investing. And the next year, I acquired 30 units, 30 rental units. And next 4 years, a total of 5 years, I was able to retire from the corporate world. And I had a total of exactly 250 units. And it was probably the best day of my life looking back. 2003, so 20 and a half years ago is when I retired from the corporate world. And I'm telling you guys, for anybody listening, man, I know everybody says it. If I can do it, you can do it. I'm telling you, you have to start with where you are, who you are, what you know, and who you know. Just, I don't care if you have to buy half of a house like me, just start there. You have to start at the place that makes sense for you. Because if you try anything else, it's going to be an exercise and frustration. So some people call it the hard way. I call it the right way. I have no debt right now. I'm completely debt free. And I tell you, real estate made it all possible. Sorry, Neil, that's my introduction.
No, it's incredible. And I know you've got quite a background, quite a story, and you're deep into the investment world, deep into the agent investment world. So it's really incredible. There's a lot of things that one can invest in, and there's some changes taking place specifically in the house rental market. On the near side, you know, we've got Airbnbs, these short-term rentals. You have what known as in the industry as a midterm rental, which unless you're deep into this, a lot of people don't even know what that is. And then you have a long-term rental, which a lot of us who've ever rented, that's a year lease, that's a two-year lease, that's a three-year lease. That would be called a long-term rental. I'm curious about where you're seeing the environment today. There's some legislation. Every state's different, of course, but you got a lot of legislation and a whole bunch of opinions on the short-term rental side as they run in direct competition of that of hotels and very wealthy industry. So I'm kind of curious as to what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And if you look forward to 24, where you are placing your bets, your investment, if you will, and what you're advising folks.
Sure. Well, first off, I want to let everybody know that the markets are always changing. There are sometimes in any particular economy, some markets are going up or other markets are going down. Market being commodity, like the real estate market versus the stock market, for example. So right now, this is my quick take on things. We're obviously in an election year, okay? So there's uncertainty there. We've just come through a major pandemic where we've had rapid, massive price increases on real estate, followed by very quick interest rate hikes. You know, we went from a 3% mortgage to a 7-something% mortgage very quickly. And that knocks a lot of people out of the market, okay? So that's one factor. We also have two, unfortunately, to consider major conflicts worldwide right now, and who knows where that's going to go. So there's some major things to take into consideration, but it doesn't mean it's time to panic. What it means is it's time to prepare. So the beautiful thing about real estate is we have a saying, you never want to wait and buy, you want to buy and wait. And that's because real estate is a long-term investment, okay? It's not like you're trading stocks or crypto or anything like that. Real estate is for a period of years, I mean, 10 years or more. So in any case, so back to this, you factor in a massive immigration also over the last decade or more. We now have in the United States, and you can talk to everybody in the world and you'll get a range of 4 to 7 million housing units short what we need. That's a major, major imbalance. So the challenge is that's very rare and unique when you consider when interest rates go up, it knocks people out of the buying market. So there's fewer buyers and more renters. Okay. Typically that's what happens. But with a shortage of housing units, that's demand. So it's like you got a downward effect on demand. And then you've got an upward effect on demand. But what does that mean? Well, I'm here to tell you, we don't know. You know, time's going to tell. Yep. So what we do is we work with what we do know. So here's what's happening. Finally, some legislation started coming out, and it started in California. California is now a rent control state. It's the first state to do it. Typically, it was at the city level. Now it's at the state level. The other thing in California is, even though they're losing people in droves, from California to other states like Arizona and Colorado and Texas and Oregon and Washington State and so forth. The reality is a large share of those immigrants coming in are going to California, okay? So they have an interesting inflow, outflow kind of thing going. So here's what they're doing. In the Bay Area right now, there is a program where you can either build or rehab existing properties to be used for affordable housing, basically subsidized housing. And the state is telling the investors, hey, if you do this, right, we will guarantee we're going to pay the monthly rent on those units as long as you do one thing. The one thing is you cannot deny applicants for financial reasons. That's what they're doing. So that's a legislation. I'm going to pass on any commentary, whether it's good or bad or right or wrong. For us investors, it just is what it is. That's the circumstance we have to deal with. Now, another program that came out through Fannie Mae is investors now, you can buy a 2-4 unit property and only have to put down 5%. Now, just like any good thing in the world, there's going to be a catch. So the catch with this program is you have to live in one of the units. It's considered owner-occupied. So essentially, you're getting a beautiful 30-year mortgage with 5% down up to a 4-unit building. Now, I'm not going to tell you what to do with that if you decide to live in it for 2 years and then rent out your unit. Whatever you want to do, that's your business. I'm just going to tell you what the opportunity is, okay? So those are two things that are coming down the road. Now, I wanted you to think about this for a second. What do those two policies and offerings, what are they leaning towards? Are they leaning towards home ownership? Or are they leaning towards rentership? Well, the former, the Bay Area program, is clearly leaning towards rentership.
Right.
The Fannie Mae program, on the surface, it looks like, hey, it's a great way for people to buy a home and live in it. That may be true. But let's face it, if it's a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, most people buying it are thinking of it as an investment, okay, to create more rentals. That's what they're doing. Their emphasis is to create more rentals to offset the shortage of housing. So the bottom line is what we can see the trend developing is a pressure to create more rentals and almost no mention of traditional homeownership. Back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, that was a big push. And now it's almost gone by the wayside. I will personally comment that I think that I don't agree with that. Okay. I think there still needs to be programs and emphasis on strong home ownership. There's a lot of factors, a lot of reasons for that, a lot of statistics, a lot of data that show when you emphasize and promote home ownership, the results are generally pretty good. I'm not saying the rental market is not good. I'm just saying there's a lot of good factors and benefits that come out of home ownership.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Yeah, I agree with you. There's tremendous benefits of home ownership, and one of them being property values. Who takes care of a property better, a homeowner or a renter?
Mm-hmm.
You'll love this, Gary. Although we're heavily in commercial, we still have a few small apartments. I got an email to me today from our property manager saying, hey, look at this. A tenant in one of our apartments emailed and their door handle pulled off. We're not putting cheap stuff in. I've never had a door handle, just a high quality, relatively expensive door handle just fall off. It's never occurred. So they beat the heck out of these things. And so those who invest in apartments often talk about tenant proofing the property or hardening the asset. So tenants are hard on these things. Talk to me about legislation or what you're seeing in the short term, midterm, and then long term side of things.
Yeah. So if you think about the three different exit strategies owning rentals, exit strategy meaning how do you get your money out? That's what that means. How do you pull your money out? In a real estate, it's two parts. The first part is cash flow, your monthly cash flow coming out. And at the end of the day, it's either going to be sell or refinance. So there's two parts to the exit strategy. The first part we'll focus on, which is how do you pull your money out on a monthly basis? So with long-term rentals, that's going to be your lowest rate of return. The gross receipts on long-term rentals are lower than if you rented short-term or midterm. Now, there is a benefit to long-term rentals. Generally speaking, if you get a good tenant, it's very quiet. It's a very passive investment. Okay. There's little turnover, there's little upkeep and so forth. All right. Now, if you don't have a good rental property, you're going to have a lot of those headaches, even with the long-term rentals. You're going to have all kinds of turnover problems, tenant problems, collection problems. So in a long-term market, I'm going to tell you, please take this to heart. Okay. And I can tell you from experiences, I've done this myself. Most investors start out buying lower priced properties because they can afford them. And on paper, the rent to value was much greater. The ratio is much greater. However, generally, they're going to be in less classy areas, higher crime rates, higher unemployment, and you're going to have more problems. It's just a fact of life. If you move into the better properties, and I'm not saying flat out luxury, but let's just take middle class properties, B grade properties, okay, B or better. Generally speaking, they will cost more. And I can guarantee you they're going to cost more, but they will also go up more in value. And you will also get higher rents, and the rent increases will also be more frequent. And you generally have better tenants and less headaches. So remember in the earlier part of this podcast, I said it's a long-term prospect. Investing in real estate is long-term. So you have to be able to have staying power for several years. You might not even cash flow for the first year, okay? So that's long-term. And by the way, if you think about the legislation coming out, it's more likely to impact long-term rentals than either midterm or short-term. In other words, the tenants' rights are going to increase while the ownership rights are decreasing. And we're already seeing that. Mm-hmm. It's been going on for a generation. You can see it in other countries like Canada to our north, and you're starting to see it in states like New Jersey, New York, California, other states. So, and again, now let's talk about short-term. That's typically what you would see in the world of Airbnb or VRBO, which is vacation rentals by owner. So the good news with the short-term rentals, guys, is this. Generally speaking, on paper, you can collect 3 to 4 times more in gross receipts with a short-term rental than you can with a long-term rental, right? In other words, instead of renting a house out at $2,000 a month for a long-term rental, you can rent it out for $2,000 a week on a short-term rental. Mm. Now, the downside is you have a lot more turnover. Every week, you're sending in a cleaning crew. Maybe every day, you're sending in a cleaning crew. You got more wear and tear. It's a high overhead business. In order to do it correctly, you probably want to have it managed, even though it's going to cost you 10, 12%. Because here's why. If you're an investor, you may already have another job. You may own another business. Even if you didn't, if you're an investor, you want to spend your time investing in playing offense, generating, you know, buying the properties, building net worth, building cash flow. A manager is making a fixed amount, and you're going to be making way more than that fixed amount on the offense side. Let somebody else play defense for you. Okay. So in any case, here's the challenge with those short-term rentals, other than what I just described. Legislation at the local level, the municipal level, has been pushing back on the short-term rentals. So this isn't a federal thing. It's not a state thing. It's the shores of Lake Michigan and outside of Green Bay or Milwaukee or Chicago, right? Those municipalities have gotten tired of weekend parties and the coming and going of all these short-term rental people and the vacations and all that stuff. They get tired of it. So they're pushing back. So it's becoming more difficult on the legal side to own short-term rentals in a lot of parts of the country. Okay. Right now, let's talk about the midterm. I saved the best for last. Midterm is what we historically have called corporate housing. This is your traveling medical person. So if you're listening, you want to write this down. Don't do it while you're driving. Just do it later. You can re-listen to this. Here's the basic vocation classes that you're going to attract on the midterm rentals. You're going to have the medical sector, right? That's traveling nurses and doctors and things like that. You've got high tech. That's your hardware and software people, software developers, things like that. You've got oil and gas is still huge, right? Those mm-hmm. people come on contract. You got military, right? Military contractors. I used to be a military contractor and we did contracts 3, 6, 9 months. Okay. Also, believe it or not, sports and entertainment. Sports and entertainment is huge. I mean, they're going, sports teams are all over the country. Yeah. You've got movies being made everywhere now. It's a big, and they need a place for like 3 months. Okay. And hundreds of people, by the way. And then you've got your typical business management and executive level travelers. They're generally traveling for greater than a month in less than a year. That's what we call it, midterm rentals. They're not bringing their families. They're not bringing their pets. They usually fly home on the weekends. And oftentimes, the person they're working for under contract or company pays their rent. So you have less turnover, right? You have less headaches. Do you have to supply the furniture? Absolutely. But you've got a single person renting who's there to work. They're not there to throw parties, right? So just think about that market sector. Think about the consumer who needs a midterm rental and their demographics and social graphics. Those are like the perfect tenants. And you generally can get 2 to 3 times gross revenue versus the traditional long-term rentals on those midterm rentals. So that's, sorry to go long on that deal. That's a big question and it requires little explanation. So,
it seems like from a passive investor standpoint, it seems like one would end up identifying people, general partner sponsors who participate in this midterm rental market. Are you seeing that there's a number of people who have shifted some of their assets on the single family side, either from short term to midterm or the other way around, from long term down to midterm?
Yeah. In fact, I just was interviewing someone who's up on the Lake Superior, Lake Michigan area. He's up there. He's got properties up there. And we were discussing this, and he was basically looking for advice. And I gave him the same discussion we just had here. And he said, ironically, Gary, I just started looking at the midterm rentals, and he's looking at moving, restructuring some of his assets, or repurposing, I call it repurposing his assets. That's the beautiful thing about real estate, guys, is you can't do this in the stock market, but with real estate, you can repurpose a property to be short-term or midterm or long-term. Now, he's definitely leaning towards midterm, and I've been telling my loved ones and my family and friends circle to start putting more emphasis on the midterms. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying give up on the short-terms, don't give up on the long-terms. It's just like any portfolio. You do want to have some balance in there, but over time, your balance can be shifted. And the beautiful thing is, it's not like you got to sell one property and buy another one to go from long-term to midterm. You just take the same property and put furnishings in it. It's really that simple. And by the way, the local ordinances and occupancy codes are very light when it comes to midterm rentals. It's very easy to have those properties in different neighborhoods and so forth.
Yeah, oftentimes they reflect that of a long-term requirement relative mm-hmm. to a rental certificate and exactly how that would align. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
When you look forward to this year, what are you most excited about?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I have a gut feeling we're going to have a good year. Now, last year, I wouldn't have said that. Last year, I was saying, hey, guys, get ready. All the factors are there. The math is what the math is. The numbers are telling us whenever you have rapid price increases in real estate, followed by rapid interest rate increases on borrowing, you're going to lead into a recession. Doesn't mean a major recession. Mm-hmm. We had actually two quarters of negative GDP. We technically had a recession last year. It just was almost unnoticeable. So here's what I see. I think we've got another year, 2-3 years, maybe out of this current cycle. The problem, though, is the debt. We keep printing money. Again, I'm going to refrain from any political commentary because both parties do it. Everybody, my family's half is on the left, half is on the right. They blame each other. And I look, just look at the facts. Both parties print too much money.
Right.
They spend way more than they bring in. If you and I did what the federal government does, Neil, we'd be in federal prison.
Correct. Yeah.
So we don't run our households like that because we'd be bankrupt.
Correct.
So the point is you got to pay the piper at some point. And all we've been doing is kicking the can down the street. We're not just creating a big bubble. We're going to have to pay for it. And by the way, if you really want to find out how serious this is, consider this. If you look at that $34 trillion in debt, and you divide by the number of people in the United States of America that are outside the womb, living, breathing people, right? Not just working adults. Every human being outside the womb has a $100,000 price tag on their back instantly, as soon as they're born. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money. It shows up because now we pay higher interest rates. We got to pay more money to borrow money. We got to borrow more money to buy. It's just insane. So, but short term, I think we're going to have a good year for making money. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their next level, whatever that next level happens to be?
Yeah, it's fear, and it's usually fear based on lack of knowledge. So if an investor has already gone through what I call stage one is you bought a duplex, and then you bought a triplex, and you bought a fourplex. What it could be 10 units, could be 30 units like me. Maybe you flipped a couple of houses. You know you can get to the next level. You can see it. You can feel it. You can touch it. You know people that are at the next level. But because your knowledge is based on what you've already accomplished and not what you want to accomplish, there's an inherent fear. It's called fear based on lack of knowledge. So if you want to overcome that, guys, one of the best things you can do is join your local apartment association. Okay, it's generally your property management association where all the big property managers belong to it, but also the big owners belong to it too. So this is different than your typical investor club. I'm all for REIA, Real Estate Investors of America. I used to be a member. In fact, I was one of the keynote speakers in 2018 at their annual cruise. Great organization, but they focus on certain things like the new investors coming up. But your group of people you just described there, they need to be hanging around with people who are already there. And one of the best places to find those people is your local apartment association. Just Google it, look it up, go to the dinner. I did it when I was a young man of 37 years old, probably. And one of the best things I've ever done, I met we call them the old lions, the guys that had hundreds of units. They took me under the wings. They helped me get to that next level. I helped them, right? It was all like old barter type stuff. I didn't pay anybody anything, but I sure worked for that knowledge and it was worth it.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Oh my gosh. Right now, at the stage of life I'm in, is two things. Well, really three things. Number one is my loved ones. I want to spend as much time as I can with my loved ones. I mean, I'm here with my mother right now, caring for her. She's elderly. She needs help. So that's my giving back to the woman who brought me into this world. That's number one. And my children, everybody, when I say loved ones, I mean family and friends and everybody. The second thing is the business. I started this new business 3 years ago. It's called the Global Investor Agent Team. And I solved the problem, which is the inherent conflict between real estate agents and real estate investors. So we literally trained the agents how to work with the investors. I've taught over 24,000 investors over the years. Now I focus on teaching the agents how to work with the investors. And the cool thing is, Neil, is nobody pays me a dime up front, which is totally different from the traditional teaching market where people pay you $25,000 up front. Right. I completely canned that model. People don't pay me until they produce. So we have a properly motivated team. We got a properly motivated agent base in 38 states, properly educated. They can walk the walk and talk the talk and now serve the investors. So that's growing. Right now, we're the largest team. This is not a brokerage. It's a team inside a brokerage. The largest team by states represented in the industry, for what I'm being told. That's number two. Number three is called a Healing House Foundation. I had the inspiration 25 years ago when I rescued a loved one and from certain destruction. And I realized there's people in the world that need housing and they need it now and they don't have any money. And you can't just throw money at a problem, guys. It's just going to get burned up. You have to solve the problem, right? So Healing House Foundation provides immediate emergency housing for those in need. And really what we do is we provide the funding for it. So you're allowed to contribute to Healing House Foundation. In fact, my last book I wrote, actually called The Global Investor Agent, it's the book, all proceeds, 100%, not net profit, total gross proceeds go to the Healing House Foundation. All the employees, we all work for free. Every 100% goes. So those are the three things. It's literally like I've turned my life around completely from building the Gary Wilson empire to helping other people build their empires.
Terrific. Your favorite book?
Oh, boy. I'd like to say Global Investor Agent, but I know that would be a shameless plug. So I tell you what, I read the Bible every single day. I've studied the Gita, the Quran, the Torah, even Buddhism, but the Bible is where all the lessons come from. It doesn't matter if you're really reading Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. That's the second book. Any of the Robert Kiyosaki books, either Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant. Yeah. Those are great books. But you know, start with the root source of all those lessons. You can't go wrong with it. Nobody ever got hurt by reading those verses. And I tell you, every single thing I've learned came from that, from all these other books. They're all based on those primary principles, like masterminds, for example. So that's really the pecking order there for books. I've got thousands of them, by the way, but those are the top three.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I have a mission card in my, I don't have it right in this pocket here, but it's my life mission that says to improve the life of every person I meet. When I'm out there, I go to the grocery store, go to get a haircut, go to dinner. Everybody I meet, I always start with a smile, and you'd be surprised at how many people smile back. It's contagious. And I always try to get a little bit of information from them, who they are, where they are, what they're doing, why they're doing it, that kind of thing. And I leave them with some type of inspiring suggestion, comment, whatever it is. I don't know what it's going to be till I'm in the moment, but that's what I do. I do that with every single person I meet. I do it with every class I teach. I always leave people walking away feeling like they're walking on cloud nine. I want them feeling good about themselves because they are good people. And they are capable of achieving far more than they think they're capable of right now. And that's the point I want to get across to them.
Gary, this is a great conversation. You've got a tremendous experience, decades of experience, or a wealth of knowledge. And I know we just scratched the surface today, but for people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where can they go? What should they do?
Well, really, any consumer can go to realestatewithgarywilson.com. We don't really promote it a lot. It's not like this is not one of those late night infomercial guru things. Everything we do is education based. We don't really turn a big profit. We turn some profit because we got to pay people. But really, there's so much free information on that site, Neil, free books, hundreds of podcasts and blogs. It just, they don't have to spend a dime if they don't want to. And for the real estate agents, guys, you've got to visit globalinvestoration.com. Make this part of your model. Work with investors. Learn how to invest yourself. So you got commission income and investment income. When you learn to walk the walk and talk the talk with the right kind of investors, you'll never have any problem getting transactions coming. You'll have more than you can handle. That's a promise.
Man, incredible. The links are below in the show notes for everybody. Gary, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, your listeners, too. I appreciate it.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.